You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Friday, 14 February, Valentine's Day. We also have Chinese vehicle sales data due later this morning, a good barometer of consumer health. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Mateta Tolari from RMB. The Rand, I got to say, it has been amazingly stable. We've had Trump throwing all sorts of things at us and all sorts of internal worries with expropriation, and yet the Rand is quite happy. I want to get his thoughts on that. Casey Sprague from Anchor Eskom did not get their 36% price increase. What does that mean? Thoughts from me in investing into water, both personally and in your investment portfolio. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb. New travel rule means the end of crypto privacy. The new travel rule mandates crypto exchanges to share client information when facilitating crypto transfers above 5,000 Rand. This is part of We Try Get Off the Grey List. Business Day, CapEx needs to triple to lift growth, according to a Nedbank survey. It says upturn in investment cycle is positive news. But long way to go. Morning markets, US was green, S&P up 1%, NASDAQ at 1.4% higher. The East is mixed, with Sydney down 0.6%, Tokyo off 0.5%. On the other side, Hong Kong is up 2.4% and Tencent up 3.9%. Commodities, mostly green. Gold futures, 2,962. Brent, 75.18. Platinum is the red at 1,050. And palladium is up at 1,030. The Rand is 18.48. Bitcoin, 97,500. And top 40 looking for a green open. Another 500 point up day, 0.6%.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Joining now with Mateta Tolari, head of FX execution at RMB. Mateta, appreciate the early morning time. You and I chat often around the Rand. We refer to it as the rattlesnake because of its insane volatility. It can move wildly. Yet over the last couple of weeks, that maybe 2 weeks, we've had all sorts of internal ructions around the expropriation bill. We've had President Trump threatening us. We've had President Trump banning aid to South Africa. And yet our currency is glued to 1850. Is our Rand growing up, or is something weirder happening?
Good morning, Simon. Yeah, look, I suppose the Rand has gained for the first time in about 5 days. Obviously, I think there's a lot that's going on in financial markets. I mean, I think if anything, everybody is watching the headlines. We did say that when President Trump comes back and it's Trump 2.0, it's really going to be headline driven. We need to understand what his policies, what is he saying. I mean, already, you know, he did obviously allude to the fact that the US and Russia are talking to end the war in Ukraine. That has spurred a bit of risk appetite. But also in the same breath, I mean, obviously, last night we saw that, you know, the levying of tariffs, that doesn't stop at this point in time, because I think it's going to be a case of tit for tat. You know, I mean, the Rand's underperformance is likely to extend to some, you know, degree, especially given the global trade war and also, you know, the potential impact of the U.S. to South Africa. And I think this is likely to continue up until at least Donald Trump's policy intentions are really clarified. But also the higher risk of a trade conflict between the US and also China is going to weigh on the Rand, since you know, these two counterparties obviously account for about 35% of goods, the trade turnover between ourselves and them. But I mean, also if you think about it, Simon, since the 5th of November, I mean, post the US elections, the Rand has lost about 6% against the dollar. We are currently the worst performing emerging market currency, which is in dark contrast to what we had opposed to the formation of the GNU. I mean, so it just shows you how politics is really taking center stage at this point in time.
And I take your point. I mean, there's a lot out there, and I suppose there's a lot of unknown at this point in time, particularly around President Trump. And it is going to be, I mean, the rand might be resting at this point in time, but we shouldn't think to ourselves that the rattlesnake nature of it is necessarily over.
Exactly. I mean, you know, I think the risks are really binary. I mean, we could see the rand, you know, back up at 1930 and possibly, you know, going all the way to 1950.
Yeah.
If we see all this uncertainty and obviously things escalate, but also it could very well also break the 18 mark and go back to 1720. It really depends on what happens. But I mean, as much as we're giving a lot of focus towards what's happening for, you know, from Donald Trump, there's still a lot happening in the background as well. I mean, we've got our budget speech next week. We've got potential ratings agencies coming to the fore. We know that there's still the war out in the Middle East as well as in Eastern Europe. There's also, you know, the chats between the US and China in terms of what's happening there with the trade war and also other countries. But nonetheless, I mean, you also think about the rhetoric around the Fed. I mean, that is really something that the market is obviously going to be watching for. We're now thinking that they're going to kick the can down the road and must probably only give us one rate cut in latter part of the year. That plays into the rand itself. So, you know, at this point in time, as much as the rand is driven by two-thirds of what happens from a global sphere and another third from what happens locally, at this point in time, you know, those things can really twist and change. And also, I mean, at the same time, you know, we have the local politics that we also have to comprehend with. I mean, the GNU, at some point, you know, people are thinking it will break off or not. That could also play a factor in the rand movement. So anything at this point in time could really rattle the rand.
So in other words, don't get complacent. We shouldn't be sitting here and thinking that all's just going to be fine. There's a lot out there. There is a ton out there. We'll leave it there. Mateta Tulari, Head of FX Execution at RMB. And that's our poll today on LinkedIn and Twitter. You think the rand can stay steady? It is every morning I wake up, I update my show notes for the intro of the show, and it's like it's moved 2 cents, and it's just not what we're used to. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Casey Sprake, you find her, of course, at Anchor. Casey, appreciate the time as always. Eskom, there they were, 300 days of no load shedding. A small stumble early this month when we got some load shedding. I think it was suspended by Sunday morning already. I mean, should we panic and dust off our backup power devices, or can we say that pretty much Eskom from producing electricity, which is what we want them to do, is broadly on the right track?
Yeah, I don't think it's a point for immediate panic at the moment, Simon. I think it just really, you know, this last bout of load shedding, or rather unexpectedly, just really serves as a reminder that, you know, not all is 100% at Eskom. And I think it's important to remember that the, you know, utility faces a plethora of issues aside from obviously regular maintenance that we just saw. You know, we mustn't forget about the overall debt profile, the direction of the entity, and the fact that there is still a long road ahead. So there's no need to re-gear up all our generators. But again, it just really, I think, serves as an uncomfortable reminder.
It absolutely does. You know, there's a lot of things as a country that we could do that would get our economic outlook looking more positive. One of them is Eskom, and, you know, that ability to serve power, it does give us a glimmer of hope in many senses.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, Eskom, you know, remains sort of at the heart of our economic and fiscal challenges, and, you know, for a long time. And any ongoing sort of operational inefficiencies and financial sort of instability and, you know, structural sort of vulnerabilities really continue to pose sort of significant risks going ahead. But, you know, that being said, the fact that we have got, you know, sustainable power supply, albeit the sort of blip that we saw at the beginning of February, that allows to sort of run through the economy. We've seen the positive effects that has, not just within our sort of economic output, but just even investor sentiments, you know, both foreign and local within the economy. We've seen that private sector investment starting to climb back into again. And that's just off the base of, you know, having a sort of stable power supply.
And part of that was, I mean, one of them is Kuberg's second unit. I mean, massive refurbishment extends its life, I think, another 20 years. And that not
only gives us power, it also reminds South Africa that, you know, that Eskom has got competencies, and it brings us, you know, 20 years of more nuclear power from that unit that hopefully will be reliable and stable.
No, 100%. I mean, I ironically actually grew up in the shadow of Goedehoop myself. And, you know, that upgrade has been actually part of a very long-term sort of life extension project, you know, aimed at really keeping the plant, as you mentioned, operational for an additional 20 years. And that really involved replacing sort of critical components, and having those units sort of come back online has really helped ensure sort of just general grid stability for us ahead. And having that sort of buffer will help us when we see, you know, sort of inevitable breakdowns of other units, you know, across the country for all different sort of power units, which will, it will come, and it's inevitable, but that just gives us a buffer to help sustain through that as the rest of the sort of various maintenance projects unravel.
One of the challenges for Eskom is they keep on trying to put through ginormous price increases. NERSA turned around and said, no chance whatsoever. Does that, I mean, they obviously, you know, they wanted 36%, which is ridiculous. They got 12.7, still a giant number. Does this, you mentioned the debt, I mean, does this, and can they work with this number? I mean, how does this work when they want 36 and they get 12.7?
It's difficult to say. I mean, especially from an economic point of view for the South African consumer, this is also a topic that's just quite close to my heart. I mean, this latest tariff adjustment, as you mentioned, of 12.7%, that actually only represents a fraction of the, you know, the 36% increase initially requested. And I mean, the regulator has sanctioned sort of electricity price hikes over the next three financial years. That it's worth bearing in mind. We also have 12.7% for now. That'll be followed by 5.36% the next year, and I think another 6% or so thereafter. Yeah. And I mean, it's worth bearing in mind that, again, Eskom had initially sought sort of steeper increases from its sort of what we call the multi-year price determination application, which actually aimed for a cumulative 66% rise over the next 3 years. So these latest sort of tariffs that have actually been approved by NERSA, again, significantly reduced these requests, and it's only 35% of Eskom's approved sort of hikes. And yes, you know, this latest increase will sort of help stem the tide for Eskom. You know, bear in mind that there's still yet another increase for consumers that will help with maintenance and plan. But for us, the longer term concern is actually more the municipal debt and the general debt profile outstanding of Eskom, which from a fiscal point of view is much more of a sort of structural long-term issues than just the immediate sort of tariff increases.
Yeah, and that is the giant headache for Eskom, and truthfully for Treasury, and ultimately for us. And you mentioned municipal debt, and that's not going away either. If anything, that continues to grow. That's somewhere where my sense is that, I mean, in theory, Eskom could turn off a municipality, and they certainly do what they call load reduction, but they're not winning that war.
No, definitely not at all. And I think this is an issue that's honestly just not spoken about enough. I mean, at this point, municipal debt is really continuing to rise at a very unsustainable pace. And I think municipal debt owed to Eskom at this point has actually surpassed 100 billion rand. Mm-hmm. And that's really starting to strain the utility's financial position overall. I mean, if we look longer term, the viability of Eskom is going to continue to remain at risk unless we see sort of decisive action being taken to reduce costs and address these municipalities sort of escalating arrears. Even with the sort of relief packages that, that Eskom's received from the government, without the sort of municipal debt being taken into consideration, we believe Eskom is going to likely require further interim financial support beyond 2026 in order for it to actually return to profitability.
Yeah, and that huge bail. I mean, yeah, it's one thing if you're bailing out SAA, you know, it takes an airline out, but Eskom's a bit of a more complicated process. We mentioned we've got Kuba coming back. We've also had a lot of independent power producers coming online. Are we still seeing a lot of interest in that? I mean, I chatted yesterday with Kuba Lewis from Pan African, and they certainly are looking to increase from around 10 to 50% the renewable energy at their mines. Are we still seeing a lot of IPPs?
Yes, no, definitely. We're seeing a sort of good amount of movement there. I mean, to put into context, I think it was 2023. South Africa actually recorded, it was an unprecedented amount of imports of renewable energy equipment. I think that amounted to approximately around, I think, $840 million, which I think really sort of highlighted this sort of expanding momentum. And we're seeing that, you know, this sort of follow through throughout the years. It has, of course, slowed down since that pace, since we've seen this infrastructure come online. But I think really these technologies, they are pivotal in diversifying our sort of energy landscape and enhancing sort of grid stability overall. And again, you know, this type of transition, it's not solely driven by just sustainability goals, but it is actually serving a critical intervention in bolstering our energy security. So we believe that will be a trend that we're going to continue to sort of see going forward. And it quite shows well is that the sort of sustained absence of load shedding that we've seen since the second quarter of 2024. It's been driven by both the combination of actually having increased electricity supply from Eskom via this and a material increase in actual consumption, which goes to show that it is actually working.
Yeah, it was 5 a.m. on the 26th of March. I don't remember that date, but that was when the Eskom app told us that load shedding was suspended and it never came back. Well, it did, but it was one of the weirdest things. A last question, and I know my listeners out there are going to shout at me when I say it, but our electricity is, for South African, expensive. In the note that you put out, you quoted some numbers, and it's gone from a little over 1,000 rand in 2014 to, over 3,000 a decade later. I mean, that is nothing in my basket has gone up as much as that. But our electricity isn't that expensive by global standards. It doesn't make the pain less, but it's not like we're being completely ripped off as some countries are. Maybe they're not being ripped off, but we're not that expensive.
No, not at all. And that's where it actually gets quite fascinated. So, if we look at sort of average household electricity prices, we actually sit mid-range sort of position, globally. Mm-hmm. We are higher than most sort of developing nations, but we are actually lower than most, developed countries. For example, I think your three highest of electricity prices on average for households comes from Italy, Ireland, and Denmark, et cetera, mm-hmm. most of Europe. The likes of Kenya, and electricity is significantly more than ours, Peru as well, the US, Australia. So again, we're sort of starting to come towards the top end of the emerging market bracket and to develop is what we'd expect for a country of South Africa's sort of position. But yes, globally, we're actually not that uncompetitive, which is, it feels uncomfortable for most consumers to see that when we see, year after year of tariff increases.
Yeah.
But globally, we're not that broadly out of context.
Yeah, it doesn't feel right, but numbers don't lie. So we will leave that there. Casey Sprague from Anchor, always appreciate the insights.
Give your money the return it wants without taking a flight with the StanLib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Thoughts for me on investing into water, both personally and in your portfolio. South Africa, we are a water-scarce country. We saw Cape Town get days away from day zero, around about 2016 or so. And more importantly, perhaps, is some parts of our water utilities are being incredibly poorly run. Hello, Joburg Water. Most of you probably don't have any this morning. The problem is on a personal point, is solving for water is harder than solving for power. You can put a JoJo tank in. It needs to be in line. What I mean by that is municipal water goes into the JoJo and then into your tank. So when the municipality can't deliver, you then run off tank automatically and seamless. It costs a couple of tens of thousands and capacity. I mean, depending on how much you use, 2,000 litre tank might seem like a lot, but it might only keep your house going for a couple of days, unlikely to survive an entire week unless you are really, really smart with water. But then I also got thinking about just investing into water. And I went digging, and there are a bunch of ETFs. There's the iShares Global Water and others, but I was looking for more innovative water technology. Instead, what we get in these ETFs is water utilities, and many of them are not doing much better than Johannesburg Water. Thames Water is, frankly, way worse off. But they've all underspent on maintenance. They've all underspent on infrastructure. They all lose, in most cases, sort of around the 40 to 50% of water due to underground leaks. Cities are growing and utilities are, frankly, struggling. I was looking for that innovation. As I said, I did find an Invesco Global Water ETF. PIO is the code. And what it's trying to do is invest in companies worldwide that create products designed to conserve and purify water. It's not doing too badly. We need to do some more digging into the underlying stocks and processes, but water is going to be a part of our future one way or another. That's it for today. We were chatting with Brad Bendel from Better Bond yesterday. Clear signs of an improving residential property market. Most noticeable on bond requests. Well, I was interested about how aggressive the banks are getting in some potential discounts. Anyway, we asked you if you were looking to buy a home. Two-thirds said, already got one. Around 15% each said, still can't afford one or renting for the win. Last few remaining said, yes, you were keen. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by StanLib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a positive rating and a review in your podcatcher of choice. And we'll chat again Monday, tax year end, some tricks.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.